Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. Still Jerry, David and Max are here. Yeah, guys, it is 2018. Yeah, and I wish this was like a joyous occasion, but after two crap games, we're all kind of down. You know, we're trying to motivate, get pumped, but I don't know if you're gonna hear a lot of that this go round. But we'll do our best to stay positive. And for some of you, that's gonna be really annoying. Yeah. Let's go through very quickly the summary of what's happening this show for the podcasters out there. We're gonna start with a Man U reaction. We're probably not even going to give a reaction to the Bournemouth game because it's probably not worth it. So we'll go through that. Both Max and David went. They went the game, and yeah. So they'll give us some. They'll probably be a little more sensitive than I am. Then we'll give a Jinktosin latest. What is going on with that transfer? It's becoming a very Evertony transfer. Yeah, because that's a word. Then we're gonna
Evertony.
Evertony. So then we're gonna be doing a Remember Me. All right, about one of our more exciting January transfers that turned into it was just weird, just a weird situation altogether. So we'll do a Remember Me, Lassina Traore. And then we'll be doing a 2017 Best Worst list. How's that going to work? Don't know. No idea. So there we go. So we need to get into the Man U reaction. So Max and David have a lot in common lately. You know, similar hair and beard mustache template. And they didn't tell me they were doing that. And then they didn't tell me that there's apparently a Toffee Blue View uniform that they've been implementing lately. Not only am I an ocean away, but I also just don't know the styles of the show anymore. That's probably better that way. All right.
Yeah.
I haven't gone beard and mustache for at least 6 years. And you would see more silver, you know.
Is this your way of saying you can't grow one, Jerry, or what?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I'll be honest. I mean, can
the silence initially was deafening there. To be fair, think so. We've struck a nerve.
I assure you, I have pictures where I've gone full bearded. I swear. My silence was like, how can I answer this in a witty way? And I came up with nothing. I had shit.
Yeah, welcome to my world every day.
Yeah, usually if I've got a time where I'm silent, I'm like, it's like Jerry's trying to figure out something funny to say, and he's blowing it. But guys, uniforms and twins aside, guys, you were both at the game. Sad times. Who wants to start with this shit?
God.
Go on, I will. That was a real difficult game, actually, yesterday to watch. I was really impressed with the first, say, 15 minutes, because it looked like we'd learned something from those previous three or four games. We looked like we had a bit of attacking intent. In fact, even the lineup looked like it had a bit more of an attacking intent behind it. So we started well. I thought Davis was playing well, which we've said on here before. When he's in an attacking team, he does seem to do a lot more than when he's set up defensively. And we were creating chances. United were still in the game as well, of course. Probably still the better team. But, you know, I thought we're going to have a go today, thankfully, and he set them up right. And then it was as the first half petered out a little bit, you could see the tide was changing. And then that second half was just shocking, I thought. It's like we come out a different side. We just sat back. I felt like it was only a matter of time before they scored, and just before that goal, Rooney had a decent chance, and he's kind of not pulled the trigger on a shot, and they went up the other end and scored. And then substitution straight after, it was just unbelievable. McCarthy actually ended up playing quite well, but to bring Rooney off, just crazy for me. He's one of our rare goal threats in the team. And then the second was inevitable. Probably could have been a few more. Felt like United didn't really get out of third gear, actually, in that second half. And just a pitiful performance again. I don't want to hog all the moaning, so I'll let you all have your own little bit there. But yeah, I was really disappointed.
Yeah, I could see the second half performance happening from the way we were almost set up in the first half. Because whenever Man United had the ball, which 9 times out of 10 would be in our half, the whole team but Nias would be behind the ball, and the nearest player to him would be Tom Davies, which is about 40 yards away. The defence tried to hold the line just in front of the box, and as you know, as David said, first half we held it quite well, but that second half, because Rooney, you know, it just, the story writes itself, really, doesn't it? I mean, Rooney gave the ball away for United to go down the other end and score, and from that, I think Rooney's head dropped a little bit because he was giving more balls away, you know, sloppy passing, and that's probably why the change went ahead, bringing McCarthy on. But I really disagreed with it, because by bringing McCarthy on, I was thinking, that's not how can we change the game, that's damage limitation. That's, you know, we don't want to concede 2 or 3 by bringing McCarthy on, and it just, we looked so limited. You know, as David said, in the first half, we did look like we were creating chances with Vlasic and Bolasie on the wing, but Bolasie just isn't fit. He, you know, that's no fault of his own. He did good at putting a good 45 minutes to start off, but I don't understand after Aaron Lennon's performances and the way Aaron Lennon's been playing. If you want Bolasie to make an impact, why not start Lennon and then bring Bolasie on? You know, there's just so many holes that you can poke in Allardyce's decisions there, and they're starting to rear the head more and more as the games are going through. And I don't think I've been quite so frustrated watching Everton in a long time after that Man United performance there.
Second half was weird. Watching it, it felt hopeless for about 75% of that second half. Manu on the front foot, defend. We clear it out. Manu get the ball again. They pass around, find an opening. We're defend. We clear it out. Manu get it. It's like we can't maintain any possession after defending. You know, every single time we would give it away, would not even get into our half. We could not even cross in to be able to get anywhere close to the goal. And it didn't happen until we brought in McCarthy. And did anybody think that sub was going to work out at all?
I still don't have an issue with McCarthy coming on, by the way. But for me, it's just not in the place of Rooney. I thought the perfect substitution would have been for Schneidlin.
Yes.
I didn't think he had a good game.
That's
again.
Totally,
that
right.
Was the perfect substitution. It didn't happen. And it just felt like United were quite... We've used this word before, but United were quite reactive. And I think they were a little bit apprehensive maybe before the game. And maybe that's how they started. And then they almost... You know, they've seen the way we've set up, the way we've been playing, especially the way we started that second half. And he sensed blood.
Hmm.
My problem with this is Man United were apprehensive. You know, you only need to be scrolling through football media for about 5 minutes, not even that, and you'll see the amount of scrutiny that club's under.
No winning four.
I tweeted that last night. You know, they haven't won in four. So that when I seen the starting lineup, I thought he's starting with two wingers. Maybe. You know, he's going to either, you know, hit them on the counter-attack or actually try and play more football. But as the game panned out, the only option, particularly in that second half, which, as you say, Jerry, did make us look hopeless, was the long ball up to Nias. And it becomes so much more evident that Nias just isn't good enough. His touch is awful. He'll chase, you know, he's all hard, but he just hasn't got a touch. You know, and that is problematic. Because when your only option is that long ball up top, if he can't control it, there's no point in even playing it. So, you know, United just caught sort of smelled blood there. And because we were unproductive, as you say, Jerry, it kind of just seemed to be long ball, they failed, and then they go on the attack. And the amount of pressure that the defence were under, you know, they were going to crack.
And that's one of the things Allardyce has talked about, how he's simplifying everything. He's simplified. So one of the things he wants his defenders to do is, if it seems like a tough play, if it seems like you're going to have to overwork to, like, play football, just get rid of it. Just launch it out. Just clear it out every time. The problem is, a lot of times, our clearances were aimless. They would go out of bounds, or they would go straight to United, or they would go to a striker who's not known for his hold-up play. You know, and that's... It was really frustrating. And the only thing that really gave us a flurry, and there was a flurry, second half, where we were outplaying them. It was short-lived, very brief. But McCarthy comes in, and his energy and tough tackling, he looked good. McCarthy looked good. First time I've been able to say that in a really long time. And I agree with what David said. You put McCarthy in for Schneiderlin. Schneiderlin pissed me off yesterday. There were times where you're like, oh, wow, that's a nice tackle. And then there was one time, second half, loose ball in the box, all right? Schneiderlin looks up and chooses not to sprint toward it, chooses to stay where he is, instead of actually sprinting toward it to beat their offense to the ball. All right, I watched him hesitate, like, I'm not going to do that. Oh, hell no.
They're the small margins that matter in games when they're fine. But at this level anyway, you're playing in the elite here. So these are the small margins. Wanting the ball a little bit more than the opposition matters. And I don't think Schneiderlin's head's even here anymore, to be honest. No. I think he's... But that's why I can't understand why he seems to still be playing so often. All right, I suppose Gay was injured, but... I don't know. He seems to be one of these. That's me.
Can I just flag that up? I think that's a strange managerial decision, because we talked about it on the last show. We didn't think Gay would be in the squad for Bournemouth, but he started. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going off against Chelsea, you know, it was quite evident it was a hamstring injury. And, you know, I've had surgery on my hamstring. Anyone who's had a bloody hamstring injury knows you're not going to be playing within a few days after that. So the decision to play him against Bournemouth, yeah, I know he scored, but to be out for a game as crucial and as big as United, I think, again, that's another poor decision from Sam.
Do you think that, and this is serious because he's tipped to this kind of thinking before, but you remember when we were talking, we were doing, was it our Chelsea reaction, where we were talking about an interview that Sam had done earlier in the week, who he was more... invested in, what was this, the Swansea game? He was more focused on, what was it that was right before that? It was the game right before Chelsea, okay? But he was mainly more focused on playing It was Swansea? Yeah, he was more focused on getting the point for that one than he was about really caring what happened at Chelsea. He was like, you know what, if we get a point, whatever, we're not expected to. I'm wondering if he was thinking, let's try to get something at Bournemouth and just admit that we'll see what we can do against Man U, and then maybe be able to start our starters again next, you know, this coming week in the derby.
That's a loser's mentality. That's a loser's mentality.
It's really strange.
It's that one tactic fits all again as well, where it's just kind of this shit back and we get something, then, yeah, great. But it's frustrating.
I know, it just seems to be this one tactical approach, which is react to whatever happens. We don't have a game plan. It was hold them out for as long as we can. And what is worth noting against, well, I was going to say this Man United side, but any Man United side over the last 25 years, really, they are so efficient at maintaining the leads, whether that means wasting time or just dragging time out through playing boring football. I know it's just a little thing to pick up on. Every substitution that they made, the man who was coming off over the far side of the pitch walked off gingerly, slowly. Just one of those things. It's time wasting, and I'm not moaning about it by any means, because it's an efficient way to see out your wins, but even after that, there was no kind of intensity or desire from the team to try and just force an attacking move, because the more the game dragged out, as Jerry said, we did have a spell in the second half where we did look like we were going to cause problems. But ultimately, when they don't result in anything, our heads just continue to go down and just accept all these oncoming attacks from United. And
I mean, let's be honest. Mentality. Yeah, I don't think that game could have been played for another 4 hours there. I don't think we would have scored. I think he would already. I think they were more relieved for the final whistle than United, because United really, that second half is probably one of the easiest 45 minutes they're going to play this season. It was just such a disappointing performance. And I think it's been a reality check, thankfully, these last few games, that, you know, we all thought we'd turn this corner, and we were talking about Europe and, you know, pushing on, and once again, they'd be looking to get top 10 at the moment. You start wondering, you know, where are we looking in these other games? Start looking at those key events. When Liverpool, you know, they were 1-0 up, they should have made it 2 before half time. Very sloppy, and they didn't. If they scored that, they'd probably beat us about 4 or 5-0. We got a penalty right on half time against Swansea when we were 1-0 down. Pulled one back there. There's been a few of them that have just gone against West Brom. They had a really good chance, didn't they? There's been a few of them that have kind of gone our way that under Koeman probably weren't, because you're just not getting the rubber the green where it's not going well for you. But I feel like we've had a few go out. Even the penalty at Anfield as well. You know, we've had one in 80-odd years. It was a penalty, but it was a 50-50, really. And many a time we'd never get them. We got it. On another day, we wouldn't, and we got beat there. So you just start thinking, well, hold on, have we been a little bit lucky recently? And now it's all kind of coming back on us, and we haven't actually improved as much as we thought we had.
So two questions that I think I want to lead into possible changes for coming up for the Cup Derby. It's coming up, is it Friday? So two questions. Number one, here in the States, the one player that everybody's talking about is Pogba, okay? They're claiming he took the game by the scruff of the neck, whatever. Did you guys feel like the center midfield, is where they were most dominant in this particular game?
The whole team was set up as a defensive unit. So I think in that respect, when there's no kind of... There was no real... I mean, I know, as I said earlier, that the defence were trying to hold the line just in front of the box. But when the whole team set up as a defensive unit with no attacking outlet, well, no effective attacking outlet, I think it's just easy to say the whole team was overrun. Really, as time kind of passed, and particularly in that second half, the more worried the team looked, because they weren't creating any substantial chances. United, as you say, Pogba was becoming increasingly more dangerous, and you know, the likes of Jesse Lingard and Martial, they were running at us, you know, and it was hard to watch, because just a little thing like we mentioned with Schneiderlin before, refusing to go in for the ball, the whole team kind of had that half-assed mentality. It might not have even been half-assed, it might have just been scared, and you know, it's just the same things, whereas you think we're turning a corner, there's just this mentality block that hits us again and again and again.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Pogba played well, but I think he was given it easy, certainly second half anyway. I don't think he had to be playing at the top of his game to kind of be so influential on the match.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm leading to here. I think Idrissa Gueye being out was a huge miss. You know, you alluded to it a little bit, Max. I think it was a bigger miss than we were prepared to really, you know, understand. I remember last season when he had accumulated too many yellow cards, and he was out against Chelsea, and we just got obliterated. I think he does a lot more than I think we don't really have a whole lot of answers when he's not in. I'm hoping that McCarthy, if he brings that kind of energy to every game, maybe he can kind of fill in there. But I have no idea. I felt like the reason what you're talking about, David, is Pogba had an easier time. I just don't think there is anybody who is up to, you know, up with him. First half, Davies was in his face. Davies had no problem You know, somebody tweeted something about Davies not realizing that he's clearly outsized against Pogba, and it was great. You know, first half, Davies played all right. I don't know. I think second half, things were made very easy for him. And it's that position, and it's that right in front of the four backs, that defensive mid position. One of the reasons why we want Nzonzi.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, well, I'm hoping. Plus, we need someone to be able to get the ball forward, and he can do that too. Because that's – I have no idea if Ghana's going to be okay to play on Friday, but that's the one thing, the number one biggest thing that I would change about our squad is let's get somebody who's not Schneiderlin that we can depend on in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think Schneiderlin is a strong enough character. I think he's a good enough player, but there's a reason why he couldn't make the cut at United. And he didn't last very long, and just too many of them players in our squad. That's why we seem to be so poor, especially against bigger sides. And it's been going on for a long time now. I think that's what's so disheartening. You know, it's hard to get motivated for these big games anymore because we look already beat before we play them.
Yeah. So really quick, these need to be quick reactions. Okay, I'm gonna name some players. Just give me your quick reaction on how you thought they played. All right. Bolasie.
No end product. You know, he showed that he can still beat a man, but he needs to work on his end product.
Okay.
A quick concern with him is that people are saying about his fitness, which I agree with, but I always remember them being very similar to this, hot and cold. So, yeah, I thought he showed glimpses, but as Max said, he needs to do a little bit more at the end of his tricks and skills.
I thought his athleticism was better than I expected, coming off that injury, and I didn't think he had a lot to work with. You know what I mean? Like, he would get to the corner, he would get around, and he would have absolutely no one to cross to. There's nobody there. So I don't know if he needs to work on finding a way to get his head up before he makes that cross, so he knows nobody's there, so he won't make the cross, and he can maybe cut in a little bit more. But yeah, I don't know. I still think he was one of our more influential players during the game.
So. Yeah, fair point.
Vlasic.
No, he did well. I thought, you know, because I think he was another player that's worth mentioning that got stuck into Pogba as well, and all these other big names. Really, you know, he was trying his best, but when there's not much else attacking movement going on, really, there was nothing else going on ahead of him or anything in field that he could play it into. So, I mean, I'm all for him playing, but the old team need to step the game up if they want to see the best out of him.
Okay.
I think it totally depends where in the ground or what camera angle you're watching, because people said he had a great game, and other people say, this is what I mean, he's got nothing going for him, he needs to be gone. I personally think he's a good player, and he showed glimpses of it again yesterday. Don't forget the lads hardly played, has he? So I was quite content with him.
Thought holding onto the ball, he did a pretty solid job. However, I saw him again have that same issue of tracking his man back. Right, that happened several. It's happened before when he's played, and I still think he's struggling with certain defensive responsibilities. He gave up a 1-2, and I guess it was Pogba. He was supposed to be following. He was supposed to be keeping track with him, and he just let him go right by. He was ball watching, you know, and it's a sign of a younger player who's not entirely concentrated on the defensive responsibilities.
Or used to such a defensive setup.
That's a good point. I think we all agree McCarthy played better than expected, right?
Yeah. It was good to see him throw in a good few tackles and show that he was, you know, up for it and looking fit. Again, it's just concerns. How long is he going to be fit for? Because I've always been a big advocate of McCarthy, as I think, you know, he shares a lot of defensive responsibility in that he can still start attacks as well. But, you know, it's just his hamstring, because he seems to just have this awful problem with his hamstring.
Yeah.
It's just how long can he be fit for, and how can we include him in the team?
Nothing to add on that. Yeah, I thought he'd done well when he come on, and he did add a little bit of bite, sorry, to the side for a little while.
I'm a little concerned about him staying on the field. You know, there's a couple of those, a couple of his tackles seemed a little borderline reckless. I was happy to see him, but yeah. I was surprised he didn't get carded.
Yeah.
And we've already talked about Nias. He's one of those guys who can create a chance out of literally nothing, but he's also, you're going to see him have one of the worst touches you've ever seen in a professional footballer. He makes bad decisions. He is the most unpredictable thing I've ever seen on a football pitch. No idea what you're going to get.
He actually missed a chance.
Sorry, what?
Didn't he? I was just saying, he actually missed a really good chance where he kind of shouldered it near post. But this is the thing that we've already said. He'll score your goals, won't he? But you need someone up there with him because he's got no build-up or hold-up play, really.
Right.
Yeah, as I was saying as well, the closest player to him after the game was Davies, who was standing bloody 40 yards away. I mean, it was every man behind the ball whenever United had it, except from Nias. And I mean, as you said, Jerry's decision-making was pretty awful against United there. There was moments when he was closing United's bin. Even like David De Gea, when David De Gea had the ball and he was just passing it around the defence, he wasn't cutting the lines of passing. It was just like running straight at the man. It was just poor decision-making.
Right. You know, Schneiderlin didn't play well. We all acknowledge that. Maybe there's a mental issue here. Maybe it's an attitude. Maybe it's a character issue. Rooney got some opportunities, gives us some key passes, but really gave the ball away very often.
That was a big game for Wayne Rooney from his own personal position. And from a fan looking on, I wanted him to do well. I was like, you know, you're a big game player, and especially playing back against these, you know, you were basically anonymous against them away. So, you know, try and make this one of your big games, which we all know that you're capable of doing. But as I say, just for the story of the game, I could see it the moment he gave that ball away. It was really sloppy as well. I could just see him going down and scoring. I can understand why he came off, because he just became a liability.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was poor from him.
Yeah, I thought he was off the boil, but I still think the substitution was wrong. I think he's the type of guy who's been there and done it, and even on off days, he can win your games, and I think he would have been our main goal threat, but yeah, it wasn't his best game, sadly.
Yeah, I wouldn't have taken him out, but he was not performing very well. But for him, though, it takes just one moment for him to be in the right place, one moment for him to make one amazing pass, so I would keep him in as long as possible. Lastly, Holgate, playing out of position. I've heard he's another one of those. I've heard very diverse reports on whether or not he played well or what. I personally didn't think he was that bad, but I do think they targeted his side because he was out of position.
I'll just echo what you said. I think he was all right, but not special.
I think he was one of the players where in that first half performance, I probably thought he was one of our best players because, you know, they were quite fluid. In that, you know, as you say, he was getting targeted down that side, but he did track the runs of Lingard, of Martial really well. Even to the point where he was cutting out the passing lines and forcing United to take shots from long range, which is good because it indicates that you're frustrating them. But in that second half, they just, you know, as David said, it was a different team that came out and, you know, they just outplayed us.
Yeah. Strange lineup, strange personnel to start this game from Sam. It seemed to me like it was, if you're going to rest the players, that seemed like the team you would play against Bournemouth, not Man U. Exactly what you were saying earlier, Max. Strange decisions yesterday from the big man. Anything else, guys? Hopefully I can definitely say with certainty we will not see the exact same set up coming up this Friday. All right.
Let's just move on from this game. It was depressing me, and I can't remember us being so subdued. Just a stinker.
All right. So we're thinking it's going to go up from here. There's our moment of hope. We're going to end with some hope.
We finish on a high.
It will be better on Friday. Damn it. that's it for our Man U reaction. We're hoping we haven't depressed you into oblivion. Hi, everybody. Jerry here. The following segment was recorded on Tuesday, January 2nd. Since then, there have been a few more bits of information that have leaked out about the Tosin transfer saga. I'll give you an update about that later on in the segment. Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. I'm Jerry. David and Max are here. Yeah, they're here in the room with me. Roland's back there, as usual. And it's time we give an update. The strongest transfer link that Everton has this January has been Cenk Tosun because we need a goal scorer. We need someone who can hold up play. We need someone who can be clinical, take advantage of what few chances we have. And he seems like a solid candidate for that. Big hello to all the Beşiktaş supporters who are watching right now. We consider you folks to be the sole reason the last transfer video is sitting at over 3,500, so 3,500 views on there. So Turkish football fans have been awesome. Yeah. They're all saying, like, really encouraging stuff. A lot of them have talked about how they're going to be Everton supporters now. They're just awesome. Just great.
Well, this is why me and Max kind of put our black/whitish tops on. But Jerry didn't get the memo. He got blue and white. He got mistaken. So apologies about that. But we're repping Besiktas.
Not an Everton podcast anymore.
Yeah. It's going to be a Besiktas.
And very similar to real life, I'm left out again.
Aww, that breaks me heart, Jerry.
All right. So, latest info on Cenk Tosun. So, it's been a roller coaster ride recently, because what Everton transfer is not a roller coaster ride? People were saying before the new year, this one is done and dusted. He's taking a medical really soon. He'll be announced New Year's Day or the 2nd. Okay? There were rumors that West Ham had made a bid, but West Ham ITK came out and said that's not true. Basically, but the Turkish sources, like, this whole time have been very consistent. They said, it's done. It's happening. Chill out. Cenk Tosun is coming to you. Relax. You will get many goals. So that was... Then in the latest, recently, some English press have come out and said that we are confident this move is going to happen. It could be sometime later today or tomorrow, which would be the 3rd. So, people are blaming Everton, saying this is Walsh's fault. This is typical Everton. Normally, it's Kinwright we blame, right?
Well, it has to be someone, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It has to be Everton.
There's not a transfer quite like an Everton transfer.
Because
the rumor was they wanted
that's so true.
The rumors was they wanted two more million, and Walsh got annoyed and said, no, we had an agreement, we're not going to do that. So about this alleged price hike, we have no idea if this is actually true. I referred to it as a rumor, and it might be. The president of Beşiktaş came out in an interview and said that's not true, that they basically have stuck to the same script the whole time. This is what the price will be. Said that negotiations are continuing and hey, everything's cool for now. He made a comment about getting a bid from a Chinese club for 35 million euros. And a lot of people are interpreting that as though he's trying to drive the price up for Everton. But a lot of other people are saying, hey, what he's saying is he wants to do right by Cenk Tosun. All right, he values him very much, and he wants to make sure whatever happens is the right thing for him. He's essentially saying that the amount is not as important as the destination. Everton Cenk Tosun supposedly wants Everton. So he wants to try to honor the player's wishes, but additionally he wants it to be a move that's a little bit better for the player's career. Also, there's been some other people speculating that the fee is agreed, and that's not even the issue here. The real thing at issue is the payment structure and how the payments are going to work. So basically, the president of Besiktas is in England meeting up with Everton's people to try to hash all this out. So that's where we are today. And it could be changing right now as I speak. Anyway, enjoy the rest of the video. Now, here's the thing. People have said that the move is still going to take place, but they haven't said whether or not we caved on the 2 million. They haven't said. So we don't know if our holding firm actually got results, or if we were like, you know what, we just need a striker. So
here's my issue. We did this all summer with Sigurdsson, and it was just the most time-wasting exercise ever, and it just meant he was less prepared to come into the side and took months to settle. We're in January. We need someone to come in and firing on all cylinders from the off. You know, I'd want to be in the squad for Friday. Doesn't look like that's going to be the case now. So it's really frustrating if it's just over 2 million because, you know, this day and age, 2 million is nothing.
I know, as you say, they're haggling over 2 million, especially in January. I don't quite understand that because I think anyone involved in football knows that you have to pay over the odds to get anyone in January.
Exactly. Anyway.
So I don't know why this wasn't expected, really. You know, trying to bring anyone in, particularly of a quality that Tosun seems to be at, it's always hard to bring people in January because, you know, you'll be messing up other squad's plans.
Mm. Yeah. But Besiktas have done nothing wrong, have they? Like, 2 million. If they're within their right to call the price because, as you've said, they're losing one of their star players. So if they want an extra couple of mil for it, you're just going to have to pay it.
Yeah, it's rough, though, because I know if I had a deal with Max to buy his zip pullover so I can fit in, and I said, Max, how much?
Hold on, what's wrong with my one?
I have no excuses on that one.
I'm sick of the favoritism towards Max. Sick of it. Just because he's the more handsome chap on the podcast.
Don't put the spotlight on me. You know, don't like
Max hates it. He like absolutely hates it. He squirms more than anything every time. But if I made an offer to Max and Max said, hey, look, it's £10. And I said, hey, what's that in dollars? And Max said, I don't know. That's your job. But we worked it out. Okay. And I'm about to pay him. And Max goes, no. Hold on. I know how badly you want this. Now I want another £5 on top of it.
Well, he knows you well, Max.
So if that happens, I would be pissed. I would be. That would annoy me, you know? So I get Everton, you know, kind of standing firm because if it does, it also, a lot of it is, I think they felt like they've been taken advantage of in previous transfers, and that's probably coming into this as well, you know?
Jerry, do you feel like, though, they should have anticipated a little bit that something like that might happen? What's your thoughts on that? I feel like if it was 5 or 10 mil or 2 million, I don't know. I feel like you've just kind of maybe got to have a buffer zone when it comes to football and accept that you might have to pay a little bit more or a little bit less than what you've agreed.
I know, but bear in mind, we're signing him while he's fully match fit. You know, he's still fully implemented in Besiktas's plans. He does look like a transfer that if it does go ahead, you know, touch wood, he'll hit the ground running. So if you're going to sign someone that's going to be fit and firing from the moment that they pull on the kit, then paying, as David said, an extra 5-10, I don't know why you don't expect that.
It is interesting that you say that, though, Jerry, that maybe the psychology of the other previous window could be playing a factor in it. That wouldn't surprise me, but you'd like to think they'd put that maybe ego side of it or whatever it is to one side and just get the deal done because we're so desperate. And the manager is the one coming out and blaming our results on the lack of firepower up front.
Yeah, ever since we've kind of got this influx of money, that's something that we've kind of developed a reputation for, I think, since the Bolasie transfer. really. I mean, the money that we paid for Bolasie, I don't know how this wasn't anticipated, really. So, yeah, as you say, haggling over 5-10 million of a fee that we're being taken advantage of, especially for a Premier League team and the amount of money that they get from TV deals and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's not even 5 or 10, is it? It's only two at the moment, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
Number one, this is all if all the things that are being said are true. All right, so there's that. I will say, though, how many deals out of, would you say, five, do you agree a fee and then right before, just as the player gets to your country so that he can come in for a medical, all of a sudden they call and say, wait, we want 2 more million. I just don't think that happens very often. I do think that it's, they should expect the team to ask for more money, but this is pretty late in the game. Like, supposedly this demand came out, like, what was it, Sunday morning? You know, before, was it Sunday or Monday morning? Either way, supposedly it was supposed to go down. Supposedly he was supposed to be at Finch Farm really soon. He was supposed to be at Goodison on, you know, at the Man U game. All this stuff was supposed to happen. And it's just, it's a strange thing. So I'm trying to decide, you know, you mentioned it, they're fully in their rights. And I think technically that is correct. You know what I mean? Like, technically, I don't think anyone can argue that because it's their player. He's a really valuable player to them. They love his ass, you know? But supposedly, Everton is his first choice. He had options to go other places, but he said no. And that's another reason why we're standing firm, supposedly, was because Tosun said, I want to go there. And they could always keep him, but he may be kind of disenfranchised after that. So it's a weird situation. I don't blame us for saying, hold on, we're not total suckers here. But I think if we end up paying it, we've just delayed us feeling like total suckers anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially that Man United performance. I can probably understand why they come out and say that after a performance like Man United. You know what I mean?
I heard that.
In movement in the attacking third or options in the attacking third, it's bound.
I feel like we'd do well just to get away with paying an extra 2 million, to be honest, after that Man United game and Bournemouth as well, to be honest. I think the next 48 hours will be massive, won't they?
Oh, another possibility for them, for Beşiktaş on the replacement, is Islam Slimani, who's playing for Leicester, who scored. That was another rumor, is that their price went up because he scored, you know, in their game.
I feel like it'd be really difficult at the moment to kind of lure players from the Premier League to another league, say like the Turkish league, just because it seems to be a bit the holy grail at the moment, doesn't it, for a lot of players playing there?
I guess it depends. I mean, if he's going to get to play Champions League against Bayern Munich, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, true. I'm Beşiktaş are a very big club as well.
They're huge.
They play in front of 30,000 every week in the loud and stuff. So, yeah, there's loads of factors to it, isn't there?
Yeah. Basically, no one knows exactly what's going on. A lot of people claim to. Some ITKs out there are saying this is done. No idea who to trust. All I know is the Turkish reports early on were, for the most part, they were leading toward the transfer happening. And right now they still are. So that's, I'm feeling confident about this right now. But
I still have faith. I'm with you. I still have faith.
I'm not gonna believe a thing until I see him almost this year. You know, I'm just
keep it balanced. Yeah, we like keep it balanced.
You know, it's inevitable. To stress it out as much as possible before anything actually happens. So I anticipate all these speed bumps in a transfer.
There were some stories that came out where Steve Walsh actually called Tosun up and said, you need to be ready to play Friday. You need to be ready to be available to play Friday. So Walsh is confident. Tosun is supposedly confident. I don't know, guys.
What, Jerry? Genuinely, I thought you were lining up a joke. Is that actually meant to be in the case?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Not everything I say is a joke, David.
that's a really good sign, I think, man, because I just could not see us going to Anfield with the attacking options that we've got at the minute and getting a result. So hopefully it can come off.
Well, that'd be one way to introduce yourself, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
8,000 Evertonians at Anfield and scoring in the Anny Road last 10 minutes. Take that.
Mm.
So, I guess anything else on Jink, guys? On Jink Tosun? Cool.
Hurry up.
We're still, yeah, hurry up. Let's make this happen. Yeah, I know we need him. So, is the price hike of 2 million true? Well, it's all over the place. We don't know. One thing is for sure, we should know more things about this either today or tomorrow. How many times have we heard 48 hours as Everton supporters? Yeah, maybe 48 hours. But I guess that's it on our Tosun update. This is a Remember Me segment. We do this every once in a while. A player that time tends to forget because time, it happens. But we're here to remind you about this player. This player happened. And so that's what this is. Remember Me. This player arrived January 30th, 2014. This is a good one to do in the winter transfer window, you know? Because it was another very weird Everton transfer. But this was one of those where we actually stole a player from another team, all right? Because this guy was going to West Ham on loan. They needed a striker, we needed a second striker. So this was a perfect opportunity, a big, imposing guy. You know, you see this guy and you see, oh, wow, he's 6'8", are you kidding? That's incredible. We're so psyched. We're like, this guy's going to win every header ever. And then the more you research him, you realize, oh, he doesn't really like playing in the air very much. He's 6'8", and he likes to play the ball on the ground. Okay? So that was weird. But it was very Martinez to find a player who's all about the football rather than finishing dead balls, whatever. So, we managed to scoop this guy right out from under West Ham. His name, Lassina Traore. Funny situation with this guy because we weren't sure that it was actually happening. It was all rumors. And then all of a sudden, here's a photo of him in a grocery store.
Yeah, in Heighton or something like that, wasn't it?
What a first place to visit, by the way. You come to Merseyside, where are you going to go? I'm going to go to Heighton. All right, yeah. Not that I ends up with Heighton, but I mean, my mum lives in Heighton, so it's okay, but...
I love how I'm laughing like I know what you're talking about. I'm really just laughing that he was there and he was spotted, but then I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about. Heighton, right? Am I right, guys? Heighton?
No, Heighton. I think it was Heighton. It's more likely to be Heighton with Finch Farm being in Heighton. I remember that picture of me. I think he had his hood up as well. You look like an NBA player, mate. You're not hard.
I mean, I love that. I've just been slating Heighton for everyone who's watching from Heighton, and then he wasn't even in Heighton. Sorry about that to the two dogs.
a little bit more on Lassina Traore. Had one appearance, played once, Swansea. Got a goal, touched the ball very few times, and one of those touches was a back heel.
Records.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, back heel as well.
Back heel goal, you know, 6'8" guy getting a back heel goal, and then manages to get hurt in warm-ups.
Against Chelsea.
Yeah.
Away.
It was a big one.
Yeah, I feel like Richard Wright done that about 12, 13 years ago. Richard Wright, the goalkeeper, got injured on the sign that said keep off the grass, and he was on that part of the grass and got injured whilst doing so. Yeah, that summed up his career, to be honest with you. If anything summed up Richard Wright's Everton career, it was that moment.
Yeah, I remember in high school, me and my friends went out to go play American football because none of them actually played, you know, football. And one of my buddies who never did anything athletic, he was a swimmer, okay? And he's never going to watch this, so I have no worry about him seeing this. I was sitting there thinking as we were walking up, I was like, you know, I don't know how he's going to do because he just doesn't normally play contact sports. On the way to play, sprains his ankle on the sidewalk as we're walking up to play. And I was just thinking, there's a metaphor. There is your metaphor right there. Beautiful. Yeah, so just a weird situation. So right after he played for us, he went back. He didn't stay. We didn't make the move permanent. Went back to Monaco, then immediately back to CSKA Moscow. Got 8 goals. Then he went to Sporting Gijón. Got 2 goals there. Then he's on loan this year to Amiens in the French Ligue 1.
If I'm not mistaken, he's still on the books at Monaco, isn't he?
Yeah, he's technically still with Monaco. Yeah.
You know.
I have no idea.
Is he available now, yes or no? Because if it gets to January the 30th again and we haven't got a striker, we'll be scraping the barrel at that point, but bring him in.
He solves the long ball issue, doesn't he? You know?
Yeah. He's a target, man.
But he's on loan, so he's probably not available. I don't even know much about the team.
I'd like to think Everton we're not setting our sights on him again. 4 years on.
He doesn't really seem like a Big Sam signing, does he? I think he would sign a 5'6" player who's better in the air than a 6'8" player who likes to keep the ball at his feet. You know, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah.
He's got 0 goals this season, 2 assists. Anyway, strange. What a bizarre transfer situation for us. And honestly, I was excited. I thought it was actually a pretty cool signing when it happened.
Yeah, I mean, he was coming into one of the best Everton teams in recent memory as well, to be honest. So, you know, I think we had high hopes for anyone who came into that team. But, I mean, if you can't sort yourself out in a warm-up, then...
Yeah. He seemed to be one of those players that had built a reputation without really... It felt like you hadn't actually watched him. It's like you knew about him and he had a name, but you hadn't actually seen that much of him. So you were excited and telling everyone we're getting that Traore, but in reality you were like, is he any good? And then he scored, because he didn't even play that well, did he? But he scored, and then...
Come back a scramble at the corner, wasn't he? He just swung his heel back at the ball.
I mean, nobody that I knew had ever heard of him. He was playing with Anji Mikashkala.
So, if you remember for a while, though, they basically tried to do like a Man City, didn't they? And they wanted to basically become Champions League winners in about 5 years. So, but they just kind of bought a load of average mercenaries who kind of had a bigger name than skill set. Sammy Eto'o.
Still can't believe I've seen him play for Everton.
I know. It's strange, isn't it?
So basically, I feel like we've given this a lot of attention.
I feel like we've done really well considering he played one game.
Because his Everton career is literally just a tiny little blip. Not even a blip. It's more of a blip. It's just so brief. It was at a time when we looked good and we needed a second striker. And we were thinking, here's a guy who's got some size. Maybe, just maybe, Martinez could do something with him and gradually bring him along, develop him. Got hurt before he really even had the chance. So, any other Lassina Traore tidbits? You guys have any crazy Traore stories from him being...
Memories,
Now I just know he had a little blonde Mohican going on, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just kind of what made that.
Yep. That's why I figured he had his hood on. It's like, if he has his hood on, he's just some tall guy who probably plays in the NBA. But if you see that shock of blonde hair, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I remember watching him play for Anji Mukishkala.
He was rocking that haircut before Pogba, really. He was doing a Pogba before Pogba, didn't he?
Yeah, that's where Pogba got it from.
Yeah.
He admired the
back. To be fair, I did hear that Pogba had, posters of him in his room when he was a little bit younger in his Everton kit, the running off during his little celebration. So I think that's where he's got the inspiration from there.
And on that bombshell.
Yeah. Oh, no, let's just.
Once again, David with his ITK knowledge. It's maybe the most useless ITK knowledge you'll ever hear. That's what we do here. You want insider transfer info? No.
Yeah. It's about as trustworthy as the actual ITK knowledge out there as well.
It's, yeah, equal in reliability. Yeah. So that's it. Do you remember him, Lucina Traore? It's a new year. It is. My calendar told me this. So we haven't done like a year in review kind of thing. So instead of doing that, we are doing a best and worst of 2017, which is interesting because that actually encapsulates two half seasons from an Everton point of view. So it's weird because when we think about, you know, the best player, the worst player, it literally is from one half of a season and another half of a season. That signing, best signing, well, it's not from the first half of 2016. It's from, it's just very, going cross-eyed just thinking about it.
I feel what makes it worse as well, sorry to cut you off, but is there's two contrasting seasons
so
as well,
different.
Aren't they? Which just makes it so much harder.
Yeah.
See how it goes.
So we'll have, yeah. we'll be naming our best and worst stuff, and then inevitably a lot of these will have a little explanation of them because, you know, maybe your best player is also not, or is not your best signing. You know what I mean? Because one happened a different year. For example, that's what happened to me. Sorry. So that, we're going to start with our best, with who do you think your best player was, your best Everton player in 2017? Max?
I'm inclined to say Wayne Rooney.
Mm-hmm.
I think purely because of I've got him down as my best signing as well. I think I know a lot of neutral football fans view that transfer as like the prodigal son coming home, but from an Evertonian perspective, I kind of interpreted that transfer as a potential shift in the mentality that the club's carried for so many years, really. It's bringing in a winner into a squad and a club that just lack complete winning mentality.
All right.
Idrissa Gueye is my player of the year, I think. Last season he was a revelation. I kept up that form going into the new year of 2017, and then he did have a difficult spell, I thought, over a couple of months this year. But when the whole team is, it's hard to kind of put any responsibility on him. And just over this last month or so, I think he's got back to his best. And when you think that we only paid about £8 million for him in that previous summer, yeah, I think he has to be my player of the year.
Yeah. So I'm just going to let everybody out there know, not only did David not give me the memo about the pullovers, but he stole my best player, and literally everything I was going to say about the best player, word for word.
What actually happened is I seen Jerry's sheet of what he was going to write, and I said, I thought, oh, I haven't done my research again. So I'm just going to say whatever Jerry says, because I know that he lets me go first.
The mistake was actually cheating off the American guy's paper, David. That's where you went wrong. So yeah, honestly, Ghana's my guy. He came in and was immediately impactful. We're a different team without him. He's everywhere. When you're amongst the European leaders in interceptions and tackles, You're having an impact. I think the fact that we paid what little we did to get him is insane. Sometimes
yeah.
Everton gets fortunate with their signings. That's the thing. So, yeah, that's my best player. The next player, next category, worst player. I struggled with this one. I'm just going to go ahead and say it, because a worst player can sometimes be a player with a lot of potential. You know, because you can't measure potential when they don't actually do anything.
So, I feel like some comebacks coming my way.
I don't want to ruin anything. All right, I'm not gonna step on your toes. All right, so who wants to go first? All right, because I'll go ahead and tell you, I'm I don't even know if mine's a good answer. I'm not confident.
So, do you not want to go first because you went last time, and I don't want you kicking off over there, giving me a tough time.
Okay, I can go first. I can, okay? That way, you're not going to be expecting me to come back at you sometime in this segment.
I feel like a professional outfit would probably just ask each other beforehand, but we're like, go on, what's yours? We'll take turns.
I also like the surprise, you know?
Yeah. We want everything to be genuine on this.
Yeah,
we don't edit these at all. We definitely didn't have a 10-minute conversation about Frasier last time we recorded. all right. So my worst player, if you'd have asked me just after Koeman left, I would have easily said Cuco Martina. Despite the fact that I didn't think he was as bad as people said, I still would have said he's the worst. However, he's actually made some impact since Sam came in. Has done not nearly as bad as you expected. Max, I see that look. It's not nearly as bad, all right? He has helped us get clean sheets. There have been games where he led us in tackles. I'm not even kidding. So I can't say Cuco Martina, all right? I'm going to say a player that has had very little impact, but he's only had half a, and I think he does have potential. Davy Clawson. You know, I just think he's not even making the squad now. Even Sandro was making the squad. And we paid, we overpaid for Davey. I hope he kicks ass. I really do. And I feel guilty for even saying his name, but it's just, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to go next and have a much better answer?
James. Now you kind of mentioned that. You kind of sprung another name right into my head. The kind of name that's ultimately, like, the second name that pops into your head as soon as you mention Davy Clawson. I was going to say Ashley Williams, but I think his form's recovered dramatically as of late.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's only fitting to say Sandro Ramirez, really.
I thought about that too. He was my first answer, actually. So I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah, definitely after, you know, the under 21s or under 23s, Euros that he had in the summer, you know, he just looked like the real deal. And I know that's a phrase that gets thrown about a lot in football with all these abstract players. But Sandro Ramirez, you know, Barca the Cat Academy product, was banging them in for a relatively average side in Malaga. And you just think, you know, we can be his big great where he can be the leading man and bag. And he just hasn't adapted at all.
Yeah.
And what really kind of rung a bell for me was Sam, you know, he wasn't even prompted to talk about Sandro, but Sandro was the first name that he mentioned when he was talking about attacking players, not having the impact that he'd have liked. So, you know, I think Sandro's been the most disappointing player.
No, what I hate the most when somebody says they're not going to do something and do it, and that's exactly what you've just done to me, Jerry. You said you're not going to stand on me toes, and you stood square on me, big toe, with heels on, mate. Right? I'm gonna add another answer onto mine, but mine was Klassen, just because it's not just the lack of performance on the pitch. Clearly he's not doing enough off the pitch either in training, because he's not even making the squad. And I feel like when your confidence is low, maybe that can be used as an excuse when you're out in front of 40,000 in the Premier League. But behind closed doors, you know, there's only you and the other players, and you've got to be performing there and getting yourself in a position to be picked, and he's clearly not doing enough. So Klassen. And another one for me, which some people may disagree with, but something that we and Max actually spoke about, Jerry, whilst you were on the loo.
Now they know I use the bathroom, David. No one ever thought I went to pee, and now they know. Thanks, man. Yeah.
But normally you just do it in that book in the corner, so it was nice he was actually going to use the toilet.
It's a coffee can, David. Get it right. Okay.
I can't relate because Mar wouldn't fit in there. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Only the classiest jokes from our show, folks.
I mean, that joke could go on and on. I was about to talk about getting the lads out to unravel it, but I thought, no, we haven't got all night. Yeah, but no, another real disappointing transfer for me actually has been Keane.
Yeah.
I think I was expecting a lot, and there was talk of fighting off the likes of United to get a signature, and I just think he hasn't looked terrible, but I think he's looked so bang average, and he was meant to be almost our kind of defender that we were going to build our team around, certainly defensively, over the next 5 years. And I prefer him not to be inside at the moment. So, yeah, Keane and Klaassen this year have been really disappointing for me.
Yeah, early on in the year, I thought Keane, at the time, was one of our strongest, was our strongest player. Because he was getting player of the match. He was looking all right. And then his confidence gradually went down. Yesterday, against United, that blind stab that he just did at Pogba, it was really difficult to watch. So I mean,
I just feel like he's a yard slower than everybody else, and he's just slow to react, and his challenges aren't great. And you said before, Max, on head like it's 20p pence.
His head has just been awful because it's been, you know, he. I think against Chelsea it was as well. He had a really, really good. He was unmarked. Gladstreet then headed, you know.
Yeah.
And he just ballooned it over the bar. So, yeah. He's disappointing.
I want to make sure everybody out there knows, though, we are not writing these players off just because we said that they are, you know, our worst player at the moment. It's just they're ones we thought were our worst player in 2017. These are players that could fully come back and be amazing, right? So, yeah, before...
And we'd be happy.
Yeah, we'd love that. Next, best signing. David, why don't you go first?
Probably the only
one I ever thought. Yeah, bloody hell, that was said with a bit of malice there.
The atmosphere in the Toffee Blue Towers is getting a bit steamy. No, I... I think for me, it's probably Pickford. He's just being relaxed. He's definitely not the final product by any stretch. I think his kicking's a bit suspect sometimes, and even the odd goal he's been a little bit suspect for. But when you think about how poor and, you know, unbalanced the defence has been at times, and he's still been really solid for us, so. And you can see the class that he's going to be. He's going to be a great goalkeeper. Suddenly, you're no longer thinking about getting a goalkeeper again. You know, like you felt like for so long with the likes of Howard and that, you're always thinking we could probably do with another number one, like a real number one. But you just feel like we've got that position sewn up now. So that's very happy with Pickford.
Go on, Jerry. Just get it out of the way. Come on, don't start with the drama. Just get it out of the way.
It's Pickford, just like David. Max, who's your pick? Totally serious too. Yeah, I really, honestly, it's funny. Like Idrissa Gueye was my best player, but because he was not technically signed in 2017, I couldn't say he was the best signing. So I also think Pickford by far has been our best signing in my opinion. And now Max is going to refute the hell out of it with his next words.
As I said earlier, I was going to be inclined to say Rooney just because of the kind of shift in mentality that bringing him in indicates. But you know, I just want to touch on that what David said there. I remember conversations from, let's say, 5 years ago that I was having saying, "Oh, I think we need to bring in another goalkeeper." So to bring in Jordan Pickford, who looked like he's going to be the best keeper that Evans had. Well, I don't want to sound harsh on Howard, but Howard did go considerably poor towards the end of his Everton career. And, you know, I don't think I'd be pushing the boat too much and saying I think Pickford's probably the best keeper that we've had since Southall. But I'm just so... I had a bit of diversity to the park. I'm just going to say Rooney, because I just... The mentality that he brings to the side, that winning mentality, the winning every inch, you know, contesting decisions from referees that we would never have done.
Yeah. To be fair, Rooney would have been my second.
Mm.
Rooney would have been maybe my 11th or 12th. No, of course, no, because you're talking about a player and a captain. You know,
yeah.
So it's not just his play on the field, which has looked mature for the most part and intelligent, scoring goals with his intelligence. Now we're talking about the worst signing. Okay, Max, your turn to lead.
Again, it's a toss between Klaassen and Sandro. You know, I could give you 10 minutes on each of them, detail on how much promise that the pair of them had, really. You know, Davy Klaassen, Ajax captain, and that is an achievement that shouldn't go, you know, shouldn't just be overlooked. I mean, becoming Ajax captain is a huge achievement, you know, to have the adoration of those fans like he still does today. And you know, from when I've watched them as well, almost Frank Lampard-esque in Holland, and you're thinking, you know, maybe he can come over here and match the intensity of the Premier League and be a really influential player, and it just looks like he's just failed miserably at that. I don't want to write him off, because I still do feel he's got the potential to be a massive player, but he's just, you know, to not, again, as we reiterate week after week, to not even be involved in the match day squads. You know, similar to Sandro, when he was getting left out the squads from the summer that he had to, and the promise that he's shown, to just to suck that down, is, even by an Evertonian's perspective, it's shocking.
Mm. And I couldn't pick between Ramirez or Klaassen for the reasons that I don't really think I need to echo them. Just huge disappointments compared to what they looked like they were going to bring.
I'm going to say Klaassen again, just because Sandro has a goal and he's actually making some match day squads lately. And Klaassen cost more money.
Mm.
He cost about four times what Sandro cost. So that's why I don't know. When I watch Klaassen, there are things I appreciate about his game. His one-touch football is intelligent, but there are things that he's lacking. Athleticism, his ability to be able to push the ball forward, which is what we need right now. We need a Ross Barkley kind of character who can push that ball forward and start connecting the defense and the mids with our strikers, with our forwards. And Klaassen hasn't really been the guy to do that. Again, I appreciate certain things about his game, but right now I have to call him the worst signing because Martina's been contributing. So let's stay negative. Your worst moment of 2017?
Getting the Cardinal by Chelsea away. It was embarrassing. It was watching it and thinking, what am I watching?
Was that this fall?
It was early in the year. I think it might have even been in the January of 2017.
Are you sure that wasn't 2016?
Sure, that was November.
Yeah, was it?
16, yeah.
I looked it up. If that's the one I'm thinking of, I was like, because I agree, that was awful. So so I think that's 2016.
No, that knows how much that's kind of been on my mind, and one of the worst ever, really.
Terrible.
I hate to do this because it's using up games here, but I've got two, really. One was United when we got 4-0, just because Lukaku getting that kind of... You know, getting one over on us, and the way he reacted was a sickener, to be honest. Plus the performance wasn't great, but then that Atalanta, I don't think that can be top for me. And that was that was a dark moment. That was by far the most bizarre Everton game I've ever been to in my life. Mm-hmm. I've never seen Goodison Park like that. And then to get beat so badly by such a... And this is no disrespect to Atalanta, but they're not a massive side in Italy. And to be beat so comprehensively was just embarrassing. That was a real low point there.
I think we're gonna have different answers. This is awesome. It's a first. Mine is weird because the score for my worst moment was actually we drew with the team. I was really, really, I got really down after the Apollon home game. Mm. Giving up that late goal where they were a man down, right? I hated that. I was livid because additionally, that result kind of made me start thinking, I don't think we're going to be back in Europa League. I think we are going. I think this is the worst.
Yeah. Can I just, because now you've mentioned that, you kind of caused a little spark in my brain. Can I just go for the away game against Atalanta? Was that 4-0 or
3-0? It's 3-0. It's 3-0. Right. We might.
Shite as well.
I'm thinking, Jesus, because it was kind of the, I think it was the first game as well.
Yeah.
The campaign.
Yeah, it was, yep. Yeah.
You're thinking, announce your intentions, because obviously we got off to a rough start in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we can get a run in Europe and to not even, and I mean, granted, we all knew that we had the relatively tough
mm-hmm.
Europa League group, but we still kind of expected to be topping that and to, you know, just think it echoed what was to come, really. Mm.
Mm. We might discuss that game again. Just saying. It might come again.
Teasing.
That's right. Carrot. I dangled the carrot. All right, so let's get a little bit more positive before we start weeping. Best moment. And we are going to go best game, worst game after this.
The 4-0 against Manchester. I think that's what I was getting mixed up in, because that might have been the January of 2017. 4-0 against Manchester City.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, for me, this is just a personal opinion. Pep Guardiola is probably, I'd rather, in my opinion, he's the best manager of all time. And to embarrass him and beat him 4-0 at Goodison Park, that was, you know, that was big. And the performance as well, I think in every aspect of the pitch, we just outclassed Manchester City to see what they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Under his guidance as well, to be one of only two teams that he hasn't beat in his career, I think that's ever Celtic. It's a great feeling.
Yeah, mine was the same, 4-0. Of course, it was one of the rare, when you really look back on the year, it's one of the rare kind of great moments we've had. And yeah, it was a great performance. It was the biggest defeat I think Guardiola's ever had in his managerial club career. But yeah, that same for me. I enjoyed it. Everything went perfect. John Stones had a stinker. He was at fault for one of the goals. Tom Davis scored a fantastic solo goal and Luckman come on. On his debut and scored as well. It was just a perfect day.
My best moment was Davies' goal in that game, in that exact same game you're talking about. It was awesome.
That moment where like Ronaldo chopped between Yaya Toure and I can't remember who else it was, but yeah, it's to start off the move and to finish it and then to knee slide and dive into the Gladys Street. It's stuff of dreams. Mm. Stuff of dreams.
I think he went next level that day, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. It was also, I mean, I don't know if we need to go into our worst game, all right? Because my worst game was the Atalanta, you know, loss by 3, where it basically, I felt like it was a genuine punch in the gut. You will not do anything in Europe this season. That was my worst game of the year.
That was the first alarm bells, wasn't it? That, oh shit, this isn't going to go to plan.
Like, this is for real. That hurt. And my best game was the same Man City game, 4-0. That was just
There's not
such
many
a high.
To choose from, is there?
No.
There's not many to choose from, sadly.
We've we've just had another kind of stuck at the glass. Well, not even that, because we've even fell below that. We're going to say, but you know, we're just at the glass ceiling, really. But
no, well, yeah, we're not even at the glass ceiling. No,
we took a dip now, and we're just like one of these mid-table clubs. It's just not what you want to see from the club that you support.
Yeah. The good thing that happened in 2017, we did manage to secure European football. That was great. That was a good thing that happened in that year. And I'm trying to move this into a positive since we're so shit right now. Something good did happen in 2017. It's not the worst year in the world for Everton, but it just happens to be ending on a not great note. So, anything else, guys? Anything else you want to go?
Bring on 2018. This is going to be our year.
May 28. All right, copy.
I was like, wait a minute, we don't say that. Nice.
Oh, let's just try. Let's just try and achieve something in 2018. You know, I know we've got Liverpool on Friday in the cup, but if we can get a result there, let's try and run for the cup. Or
you know what I'd like to see, which I think is achievable, genuinely, forget silverware and stuff. I'd like to see Everton just going back to winning some big games again, whether it just be a Goodison. I feel like we constantly fold on the big games and pressure, and wouldn't it be great to beat some of the top six, maybe if we win the derby or not, Friday, I don't know. But even, you know, we've got another one at Goodison late in the year. You know, win that one and just start getting a bit of belief back in big games. I think if we could at least do that this year and finish the year still in a couple of cup competitions as well, like, you know, the League Cup and the preliminaries of the FA Cup, then, you know, we're on our way back, trying to have a strong finish to the season and then build on it next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The idea of having to set up defensively and try to stave off the other team, to be able to figure out a way to actually get some chances against the big teams.
Yeah.
You know, I think that'd be a solid goal for this coming year.
Yeah, I think just the current squad is a really awkward squad to have, because with us being so poor, you still don't know whether we need a complete overhaul or whether it's just a few adjustments. You know, I've seen a few fans kind of discussing that on Twitter after the Man United game. Someone feels like the current Everton squad might take 5 to 10 years to completely overhaul and start looking positive again. But, you know.
I mean, no disrespect to whoever that was, but I think that's crazy, because it doesn't take 5 or 10 years to overhaul a squad, in my opinion. But I think squads can change very quick now, especially when we've got a bit of money behind us. I don't know, maybe you two disagree, I'm not sure, but that 5 or 10 years seems very long-winded. And, you know, Man City were, you know, within 5 years, they went from being a nothing side to, like, winning Premier League titles. So I think we've got a better squad than what they did when they first got that oil money. So, I think some fine tuning is what we need, and maybe the right play in the right position.
I think it's going to take 2 years.
Mm.
2 years to get Champions League caliber squad. I'm gonna totally split the difference between what you're saying and what you're saying, because it's the best chance of me being right.
I don't see Everton. I've just never been completely honest. I don't see Everton being a Champions League team.
I don't think it's the personnel though. I think Everton have just got a really well. I don't want to go back into it because we're gonna finish on a low. We'll talk about it again, I think, later in the week, given the fixture that's coming up. But we've all spoke about it before. I just think it's the mentality within the club. We haven't got a big club mentality.
I think that's where the 5 and 10 years is coming from, because I don't think just me and the squad. I think the complete mentality of, you know, backroom staff, who's in charge, etc., etc. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is actually, I think, a really good subject for a separate video.
Yeah, we will.
You know what I mean? Because it's another one of those genuine questions that right now there's no answer to. There's no right answer. All you can do is come up with something you think works and be able to back it up with evidence. And that's the best you can do. You know, because all three of us are like, yeah, we think this because of this, but it's all, you know, guesswork, really. It's a good topic, though. Damn, it's a good topic. And the, only the people who give a shit about the club are going to have it, have this conversation. You know what I mean? Anyway, we should probably end this. 2018 needs to be better than 2017.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to say.
It really does.
All right. So can we put a bow around this? Wrap it up? Feeling good?
Let's wrap it up.
All right. So that is our 2017 best worst list. Additionally, that's the end of the big show for all you podcasters out there. Thank you very much for listening to us via podcast. Subscribe to us and rate us if your format allows you to. Additionally, if you're digging the videos, please subscribe. Really close to 300. We may actually be at 300 by the time these videos hit the web. Thanks a lot for that. Leave a like, leave a comment. Let's talk. What are your 2017 best worst? You're probably going to rip ours a new one. That's fine. We're good with that. Check out these guys' work on the Toffee Blues website, both of them. They have lots of stuff on Toffee Blues website, all right? Additionally, David's got some stuff on The Sportsman. And, I think that's it. We will bid you adieu. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you later in the week. Bye.